Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
A glossary of terminology and jargon from Dante Valentine is included on the final track of this recording. Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Croix's Dante Valentine, narrated by Colleen Delaney, with performances by Thomas Keegan, Kimberly Gilbert, Terrence Aselford, James Keegan, M.B. Van Dorn, Richard Rowan, Christopher Graybill, Amanda Thickpenny, Tim Getman, Yasmin Toison, Mort Shelby, Christopher Sheeran, and Nathaniel Perry. Book 2, Dead Man Rising, Part 1.
The cavernous maw of the warehouse was like the throat of some huge beast, and even though it was large and airy, claustrophobia still tore at my throat. When I swallowed, I tasted copper and the wet rat fur reek of panic.
How do I talk myself into these things?
Come on, do a bounty. It's easy as 1, 2, 3. We've done 100 of them.
Sure, that's it.
Darkness pressed close as the lights flickered.
Damn corporate greed not putting proper lighting in their goddamn warehouses. The least they could have done is had the fluorescents replaced.
Then again, corporations don't plan for hunters taking down bounties in their warehouses, and my vision was a lot better than it used to be. I eased forward, soft and silent, broken in boots touching the cracked and uneven floor. My rings glinted, swirling with steady, muted light. The Glockstrike R4 was in my left hand, my crippled right hand curled around to brace the left. It had taken me weeks to shoot left-handed with anything like my former accuracy. And why, you might ask, was I using a projectile gun when I had two perfectly good 40-watt plas guns holstered in my rig? Because Manuel Bulgarov had taken refuge in a warehouse full of plastic barrels of reactive paint for spreading on the undersides of hovers. That's why. Reactive paint is mostly non-volatile, except for when Plasfield interacts with it. One plas gun blast and we'd be caught in a reaction fire, and though I was a lot tougher than I used to be, I didn't think I could outrun a molecular bond weakening burst fueled by hundreds, if not thousands, of gallons of reactive. A burst like that travels at about half the speed of light until it reaches its containment edge. Even if I could outrun or survive it, Jace certainly couldn't, and he was covering me from the other side of the T-shaped intersection of corridors, faced with blue barrel after blue barrel of reactive.
Just like a goddamn bounty to hide in a warehouse full of reactive. Makes my day.
Jace's fair blonde face was marred with blood that almost hid the thorny accreditation tat and the spreading bruise up his left cheek. He was bleeding from his shoulder, too. Ending up in a bar brawl that alerted our quarry was not the way I'd wanted to do this bounty. His blue eyes were sharp and steady, but his breathing was a little too fast, and I could smell the exhaustion on him. I felt familiar worry rise under my breastbone, shoved it down. My left shoulder prickled with numb chill, A demon's mark gone dead against my flesh, and a few stray strands of hair fell in my face.
Thank the gods I don't sweat much anymore.
I could feel the inked lines of my own accreditation tat twisting and tingling under the skin of my left cheek. The emerald set at the top of the twisted caduceus, probably flashing.
Tone it down, Danny. Don't want to give the bastard a twinkle and let him squeeze off a shot or two.
Bulgaroff didn't have a plas gun. Or at least I was reasonably certain he hadn't had one when he'd gone out the back door of the Playround nightclub and onto an air bike with us right behind him, only slightly slowed down by the explosion of the brawl. After all, the Playround was a watering hole for illicits, and once we'd moved and shown we were bounty hunters, all hell had broken loose. If he'd had a plas gun, he probably wouldn't have bothered to run. No, he would have turned the bar into a fire zone. Probably. I'd almost had Bulgaroff, but he was quick. Too quick to be strictly normal, though he wasn't a scion. I made a mental note to tell my scheduler Trina to tack 15% onto the fee. Nobody had mentioned the bastard was gene-spliced and augmented to within an inch of violating the Erdweil-Stokes Act of 28. That would have been nice information to have. Necessary information, even. My shoulders still hurt from clipping the side of a hover as we chased him through nighttime traffic on Copley Avenue. He'd been keeping low to avoid the patrols, though how you could be inconspicuous with two bounty hunters chasing you on air bikes, I couldn't guess. It was illegal to flee, especially once a bounty hunter had identified herself as a hegemony federal officer. But Bulgaroff hadn't gotten away with rape, murder, extortion, and trafficking illegal weapons by being a law-abiding jackass who cared about two more counts of felony evading. No, he was an entirely different kind of jackass. And staying low meant a little more time without the hegemony patrols getting involved in the tangle, which made it him against just two bounty hunters instead of against full-scale containment teams. It was a nice move, and sound logic. If the two bounty hunters weren't an almost demon and the shaman who had taught her a good deal about hunting bounties. My eyes met Jace's again. He nodded curtly, reading my face. Like it or not, I was the one who could take more damage, and I usually took point anyway. Years of working bounties alone made it a tough habit to break.
He's still good to work with. It's just like old times, only everything's changed.
I eased around the corner, hugging the wall, extending my awareness a little, just a very little, feeling the pulse thunder in my wrists and forehead. The warehouse was mag-shielded and had a basic corporate security net, but Bulgaroff had just walked right in like he owned the place. Not a good sign. He might have bought a short-term quick shield meant to keep him from detection by scions or security nets. Just what I'd expect from the tricky bastard.
Concentrate, Danny. Don't get cocky because he's not a scion. He's dangerous and augmented.
Ooh. My right hand cramped again, pointlessly. It was getting stronger the more I used it. 3 days without sleep, tracking Bulgaroff through the worst sinks in North New York, Jersey, taxed even my endurance. Jace could fall asleep almost instantly, wedged in a hover or transport seat while I crunched data or piloted. It had been a fast run, no time to catch our breath. Two other bounty hunters, both normals but with combat augments, had gone down trying to bring this guy in. The next logical choice had been to bring a scion in, and I was fresh from hunting a magi gone bad in Freetown, Tijuana. From one job to the next, with no time to think. Perfect. I didn't want to think about anything but getting the next bounty collared. I would be lying if I said the idea of the two extra murder charges and two of felony evading tacked on to Bulgaroff's long list of indictments didn't bring a smile to my face. A hard, delighted grin, as a matter of fact, since it meant Bulgaroff would face capital punishment instead of just filling a prison cell. I edged forward, reaching the end of the aisle, glanced up, nothing in the rafters, but it was good to check.
This is one tricky son of a bitch.
If he'd been a scion, it would have made things a little easier. I could have tracked the smears of adrenaline and power he'd leave on the air when he got tired enough. As it was, the messy, sewer-smelling drift of his psychic footprint faded and flared maddeningly. If I dropped below the conscious level of thought and tried to scan him, I'd be vulnerable to a detonation circuit in a quick shield. And it wasn't like this guy not to have a death circuit built in if he spent the credit for a shield. I could live without the screaming migraine feedback of cracking a shield meant to keep a normal from a scion's notice. Thank you very much.
So it's old-fashioned instinct doing the work on this one. Is he heading for an exit or sitting tight? My guess is sitting tight in a nice little cubbyhole, waiting for us to come into sight, pretty as you please. Like shooting fish in a barrel. Sekhmet Sias, he better not have a blast gun. He doesn't. I'm almost sure he doesn't.
Almost sure wasn't good enough. Almost sure, in my experience, was the shortest road to oh fuck. Jace's aura touched mine. The spiked honey pepper scent of a shaman rising around me, along with the cloying reek of dying human cells.
Ugh. I wish I could turn my nose off, or tone it down a little.
Smelling everyone's death on them is not a pleasant thing. Even though I, of all people, know death is truly nothing to fear. Whenever I thought about it, the mark on my shoulder seemed to get a little colder.
Don't fucking think about that, Danny. Nice and cautious. Move it along here.
I ducked reflexively, calculating angles even as I berated myself for flinching.
God damn it, Danny. If you heard the shot, it didn't get you. He's blown cover, and you know where he is. Now move, move, move!
I took off, not bothering to look behind me. Jace's aura was clear, steady, and strong. He hadn't been hit. Reactive paint sprayed as I moved, blurringly, much faster than a normal human. My gun holstered itself as I leapt, claws extending sweetly, naturally, my right hand giving a flare of pain I ignored as I dug into the side of a plastic barrel, hurling myself up, and from there I leapt, feet smacking the smooth round tops of the barrels. My rings spat golden sparks, all need for silence gone. The racks holding the barrels swayed slightly as I landed and pushed off again. Little glowing spits and spats of thick reactive paint spraying behind me as lead chewed the air.
He's got a fucking semi-automatic assault rifle up there. Sounds like a transom from the Chatter, goddamn cheap Putchkin piece of shit. If he'd had a good gun, he'd have hit me by now.
I was almost under the floating panel of a hover platform. Its underside glowed with reactive paint, and I could see the metal cage on top where the operator would guide the AI deck through manipulating the dangling tentacles of crab hooks to pick up 5 rats at a time and transport them to the staging area. A low, indistinct male shape crouched on the edge of the platform, orange bursts showing from the muzzle of the semi-automatic rifle with the distinct transom shape. He wasn't aiming at me now. He was aiming behind me at Jace, and this thought spurred me. I gathered myself and leapt, fingers sinking into the edge of the platform's corrugated metal, and arms straining, the dead weight of my body becoming momentum as I pulled myself up as easily as if I were muscling out of a swim tank. Almost overbalanced, in fact, still not used to the reflex speed of this new body. Proprioception still a little off, moving through space faster than I thought I was.
Don't hit Jace, you motherfucker, or I'm gonna have to bring you in dead and accept half my fee. Don't you dare hit him, you piece of shit!
The gun barrel swung. A smashing impact against my belly, and another against my ribcage, then I was on him. I smacked the barrel up. Hot metal sizzled, and a jolt of pain seared up my arm from the contact, then faded as my body coped with the damage. He was combat augmented, with reactions quicker than the normal humans, but I'd been genetically altered by a demon, and no amount of augmentation could match that. At least, none that I'd come across yet. I tore the transom away and grabbed his wrist in my cramping right hand, setting my feet and yanking sharply down. I dislocated his shoulder. Fierce enjoyment spilled through me. The emerald on my cheek giving one sharp flash. My ringed fist rammed into the solar plexus, but I pulled the strike at the last moment so as not to rupture fragile human flesh. My rings turned my fist into a battering ram. Psychic and physical power wedded to a strike that could kill as well as daze. The oof sound he made might have been funny if I hadn't felt hot blood dripping down my ribs and the slight twitching as a bullet was expelled from the preternatural flesh of my belly.
Ouch!
It stung briefly, then smoothed itself out, black blood rising and sealing the seamless golden flesh.
Another shirt ruined. I'm racking up dead laundry by the ton now.
Of course, I could afford it. I was rich, wasn't I? He was off balance, and I shifted my weight, hips striking as I came in close. He fell, and I was on him. I yanked both arms behind his back, my fingers sinking into rubbery, augmented muscle fed by kcals of synth protein shake and testos injections.
I'm gonna have to pop that shoulder of yours back in so you can't shimmy free of mage cuffs.
You've got him down. Don't get cocky. This is the critical point. Just cuff him. Don't get fancy.
He bucked, but I had a knee firmly in his back, and my own weight was not inconsiderable. Heavy with denser bones and muscle now. The quick shield sparked and struggled, trying to throw me off. It was a sloppy, hastily purchased piece of work. All right for hiding, but no good when you had an angry necromance on your back.
Groot!
One short, sharp word broke it, my sorcerous will slicing through the shell of energy. A magi's work, and a good one, despite being so hurried. I snapped the mental traces aside, taking a good lungful of the scent. Maybe we could track down whoever did the quick shield. Maybe not. They hadn't done anything illegal in providing the shield. Quicks were perfectly legal all the way around. But a magi this good might have something to say about demons. Something I'd want to hear.
Jace?
The sharp smell of reactive paint bloomed up, mixing with dust, metal, the smell of human, hot cordite, sweat, and my own spiced fragrance, a light amber musk. Sometimes my own smell acted like a shield against the swirling cloud of human decay all around me. Sometimes not. It wasn't the psychic, non-physical smell of a true demon, but the scent of something in between.
Monroe? How you doing? Jace?
My throat was probably permanently ruined from Lucifer's fingers sinking in and cracking little bits of whatever almost demons had in their necks. I sounded like a vidsex operator sometimes. Apparently, I could heal from bullets, but demon-induced damage to my throat was another thing entirely.
Answer me. He was aiming at you, Jace. Answer me.
You are so much fun to hang out with, Valentine.
His voice came from below. I tried not to feel the hot burst of relief right under my ribs. The bitter taste of another hunt finished exploded in my mouth, my heart thudding back to a slower pace. My left shoulder prickled numbly, as if the fluid mark scored into my skin was working its way deeper.
Don't think about that.
Got him?
Of course I've got him. You think I'd be talking if I didn't?
Stuffed and almost cuffed. See if you can find the control panels and bring this sucker to the loading dock, will you?
My lungs returned to their regular, even task.
You okay?
He was rubbed just as raw as I was.
Right as rain, baby. Get you in a second.
My right hand clumsily fumbled for the mage cuffs. I sank my knee into his heaving back. He was a short, squat man, corded with heavy muscle and dressed in a long-sleeved shirt and jeans under his assassin's rig. A long rat tail of pale hair sliding out from under the kerchief he'd tied around his head, like a kid playing mini-gang. The mage cuffs cooperated, and I held him down while I popped his shoulder back into the socket. Unlucky day for you. The cuffs held steady, and just to be sure, I dug in my bag and retrieved the mage tape, spent a few minutes binding the bastard's elbows, knees, and ankles. I gagged him, too. Suddenly, the hover platform's control board lit up. I kept the man down and watched him cautiously while the platform jolted into life and began to glide on its prearranged path. Bulgarov had escaped last year from a 7-person hegemony police unit that had him down and cuffed. I didn't want to underestimate him. 4 little girls, 6 hookers we know of he killed for sure, 3 we're not sure of, and 8 men, mostly chill dealers. I wouldn't have minded the chill dealers, but the kids. My rings were back to a steady glow. Amber, moonstone, obsidian, and bloodstone all swirling with easy power. I surveyed the mess the bullets had made of the reactive barrels as the hover platform glided over neatly placed racks and rows. Glowing paint dripped thickly under dim, sputtering light from fluorescents turned down for the night, pulsing outside in all its shades of darkness. And he killed them slow. Gods. I could understand killing when necessary. The gods know I've done my share. But kids and defenseless women, even a Cetayeen healer experienced with mental illness could do nothing for this man. He was a pure sociopath. No remorse, no hesitation, no conscience at all. He was neither the first nor the last of his kind the world would see. And probably not the last one I'd hunt, either. The trouble was I'd had little difficulty tracking him, thinking like him, being like him to catch him. That was starting to worry me. The hover platform settled with a jolt. Bulgarov thrashed. It probably wasn't comfortable lying face down on a cold metal platform with a stretched out busted shoulder and a bruised solar plexus. I might have broken his nose too when I had my knee in his back. At least I hoped I had. My hand tightened on the neck of his jacket as I finished searching him for weapons, finding the trigger to the quickshield, a pretty ceramic medallion with a seal of Solomon etched into one side, 4 knives, 2 projectile guns, and a little 20-watt recharge plas gun fitted into a pocket on the thigh of his jeans. I turned the plas gun over in my hand. A tremor slid through me.
God! That close to blowing up this whole warehouse would have taken a good chunk out of the neighborhood here, too. You son of a bitch. Thank the gods you didn't use this.
The assault rifle bothered me, but he could have had it stashed on the air bike. My tat tingled, ink running under my skin, and my left shoulder tingled, too. I was used to both sensations by now, did my best to ignore them. I'd smashed my slickboard into the side of a concrete building. If I was still human, I'd be dead by now. Jace met me on the platform. He looked like hell, his clothes torn and his face bloody and bruised. He also looked chalky pale under his perpetual tan. I'd have to heal charm him, or find a healer to do it.
You okay?
He nodded, his blue eyes moving over the trussed package on the floor, checking. I reached down, set my feet, and hauled Bulgarov up, nodding toward the pile of weapons. Without the brace of his shaman's staff, Jace almost limped on his stiff knee over to the pile. His sword jammed through the belt on his rig. It was a Dotaniki, heavier than the last sword I'd used. My right hand cramped again, remembering driving the shattering blade through a demon's heart as we both fell through icy air and smashed into the surface of the frozen sea.
Don't think about that. Thinking about that only makes you think of Jeffermel.
I winced inwardly as I hopped down to the yellow-painted concrete of the loading dock, the shock grating in my knees.
I've gone a whole, 45 minutes without thinking of him?
Adrenaline was wonderful, even if I wasn't sure what the demon equivalent to adrenaline was.
Now, if I could just find another bounty as soon as I dragged this guy in, I'd be all set.
Chango. He had a plas gun.
I could have laughed. I didn't. The short man was a heavy, limp weight. More awkward than hard to carry. I was a lot stronger than I looked. He'd given up thrashing. His ribs heaved with deep breaths. I caught him straining against the mage tape and dumped him on the concrete. I drew one of my mongooshes from its sheath and dropped to my knees, my fingers curling in his greasy hair. This close, I could see the blemishes on his skin, blackheads rising to the oily surface, a side effect of illegal augments. He had a pallid, moon-shaped face, scarred and pocked by terminal acne. Revulsion touched my stomach. I pushed it down, pulling his head back and craning his neck uncomfortably.
It would be easy to give a sudden twist. Hear the snap like a dry stick. So easy.
I laid the knife blade against his throat and put my mouth to his ear.
Keep struggling. I'd love to rid the world of a blight like you. And I'm a deadhead, Bulgarov. I can easily bring you back over the bridge and kill you twice.
I couldn't, of course. Death didn't work like that. An apparition brought back from the halls of the hereafter couldn't be killed twice. Only sent back into death's embrace.
No reason for the bastard to know that.
I'd seen the files and the Lay's photos. I knew what this bastard had done to the little girls before he killed them. He went limp for a moment, then struggled frantically against the mage tape. I held him down, easy now that he was bound, and used the knife's razor edge to prick at his flesh, right over where the pulse beat.
Come on. Struggle harder, sweetheart. I'd love to do to you what you did to the little blonde girl. Her name was Shelley. Did you know that?
Danny. Hey, I've keyed in for pickup. We got a Jersey police transport coming to get us in our little package. Want me to bag the weapons?
Does he sound uneasy? Nah, of course not.
Or did he? I might be a little uneasy if I hung around me. I wasn't hinged too tightly these days. Call it nerves.
Sure. Make sure that plasgun's sealed.
My messenger bag's strap dug against my shoulder as I turned my head. A tendril of dark hair fell in my face, freed of the tight braid I'd put in this morning. Bulgarov had gone limp and still as a fresh corpse underneath me. I resheathed the knife and let him go. My hands were shaking, even my crippled right hand, which rubbed itself against my jeans. I was dusty and tired. No time for a shower while I was tracking this bastard. Barely enough time for food to keep Jace going, since my stomach usually closed up tight on a hunt. Jace was looking a little worse for wear, but he insisted on coming along, and I was soft enough to let him, after a bit of bitching, of course. Anything was better than staying at home, staring at the walls and thinking thoughts I would rather not think. Especially since the only thing I seemed to be able to do while I was at home was research in Magi shadow journals and stare at the black urn that held a demon's ashes. A fallen demon.
Jaframel.
You will not leave me to wander the earth alone!
I shut my eyes briefly. The mark on my left shoulder. His mark. The burning scar Lucifer had pressed into my flesh to make Jaframel my familiar hadn't faded with Jaff's death. Just gone numb as if shot with varicane. Sometimes it was like a mass of burning ice pressed into the skin, pulsing every now and again with a weird, necrotic life of its own. I wondered how long it would feel like that, if it would ever fade, and how long it would take for the cold, burning numbness to fade, if it ever did.
God damn it, Dante, will you quit thinking about that?
All this reactive paint, and the bastard had a plasgun all the time.
What if he decided to take a pot shot? Take us with him. Can a reactive fire kill me?
I didn't know. I didn't know what I was now. Other than almost demon. Part demon.
Whatever.
I was stuck with the face of a Holovid model, and a body that sometimes escaped my control and moved far faster than it should. And I was taking down bounties like they were going out of style. Gabe called it bounty sickness, and I wasn't sure she was far wrong. I'd be home this week for my usual Thursday rendezvous with Gabe in the back booth they saved for us at Fa Choi's. I'd missed it last week.
That's a good thought. Keep that one.
Jace bagged Bulgarov's weapons. But what I thought of as I watched the shapeless lump of the man mage-taped on the floor was green eyes turning dark and thoughtful, and a long black coat, golden skin, and a faint, secretive tilt to a thin mouth.
God damn it!
I was thinking about a demon again. A dead demon at that.
Does a demon have a soul?
The Magi don't know. They only know what demons tell them, and the questions never come up.
And what am I? What did he do to me, and why didn't I die when he did?
That was a bad thought. Jace brought the bagged weapons over, his injured knee slowing him a little, and gave me a tight smile.
Fresh as a daisy. I hate that about you.
Fuck you too. It was post-job banter, meant to ease the nerves and bring us down. It was working.
Anytime, sweetheart. We got a few minutes before the transport gets here.
His mouth quirked up into a half smile, and he rolled his shoulders back under the leather straps of his rig. But his eyes slid over the man on the floor, checking the mage tape. Professional to the last. A handsome, blue-eyed man, spirit bag dangling from a leather thong around his neck, marking him as a Vodun, just as the tat on his cheek marked him as a shaman. He'd cut his hair like Gypsy Rowan's sidekick on the Holovids, soft and spiky. A nice cut on him, especially with his lazy smile and his electric eyes. I tried not to laugh. You're the soul of chivalry, as always.
Only for you, baby. You want to carry him outside?
Do I get to drop him head first?
If you want, sweetheart, make sure you do it on concrete.
We caught the red-eye transport back to Saint City. It deposited us onto the dock amid a stream of normals. I was glad to get off the transport. Claustrophobia tends to run in Scions. I was also happy to get rid of the whine of hover travel. It settles in the back teeth, hover whine, and rattles your bones. Normals can't hear it, but they get itchy on long hover flights too. Of course, it could be because all the normals I've seen on transports are a little edgy at being in a compartment with a Scion. For some reason, they think we want to read their minds or force them to do embarrassing things. Though the gods know that the last place a Scion wants to tread is the messy, open sewer of a normal person's brain. Without the regulation and cleanness imparted by training, minds can get rank and foul very quickly. And they stay that way. I don't know how normals endure it. I was wearing my last clean shirt, but the fact that my jeans were dotted with black blood that smelled like sweet rotting fruit might have had something to do with the sidelong looks and not-so-subtle avoidance of normals. Or perhaps it was my rings, glowing faintly even in the gray, thin morning light. Or the rig with the guns and knives stating clearly that I was combat-trained and licensed to carry anything short of an assault rifle on public transport. Or the Holovid star face with velvety golden skin and dark eyes set above a sinfully sweet mouth. Or the way my right hand twisted sometimes into a claw without my realizing it, cramping up as if it was trying to grab a corkscrewed sword hilt. I missed the feel of a hilt and the clean confidence of carrying a katana. Knives just aren't the same. But shattering a sword in a demon's heart isn't the best way to keep your sword hand whole. I was lucky. If Jaframel hadn't changed me into whatever I was now, killing Santino might have killed me instead of just crippling my slowly healing hand. Yeah, lucky. Lucky me. My skin tingled as we stood there, Jace leaning on his staff, rescued from the hotel room in Jersey, with its raffia twine at the top, small bones clicking and shifting against one another, even though the staff wasn't moving. After a while, a shaman's staff tends to take on a personality of its own, much like any object used to contain power. There are even stories of shamans who have passed their staves on to students or children, mostly in the older traditions. Jace was an eclectic, like most North American shamans. It's hard to work for the hegemony and only stick with one discipline. Plus, Scions tend to be magpies. We pick up a little of this, a little of that, whatever works. The use of magical and psionic power is so incredibly personal, we'd be fools to do otherwise. The tingling on my skin was my body adjusting to the flux of power in the rainy air. The transport well was so full we had docked in an auxiliary outside bay. Rain misted down. A thin, barely autumn drizzle that smelled of hover wash, the salt from the bay, and the peculiar, damp, radioactive smell of Saint City. Home.
Funny how the longer I spend chasing down bounties, the more I think of Saint City as home.
Jace tapped the butt of his staff against the concrete, gently. Just a punctuation, not the sharp gun crack of frustration.
You coming home?
His wheat gold hair was beginning to darken and slick itself down with the drizzle. The bruise had faded, and I could see the faint pulsing of the heel charm I'd laid on him. He'd slept on the transport. I hadn't. But we were both night creatures. Being out in the light of early morning was guaranteed to make both of us cranky. Not to mention, he'd need a few hours or so to reaccustom himself to the flux of ambient power here. We hadn't been gone long enough for his body to set itself to Jersey's power flux. It was like hover lag, when the body isn't sure whether it's day or night because of the speed of transport. only harder, and if a scion was drained and exhausted enough, potentially very painful. I found my voice. Wherever we were going, we could take the lifts down to the street together. If I wanted to.
No. I've got a few things to do.
I thought so.
He nodded sagely. A tall, spare man with a quick, famous grin. His assassin's rig easy over his black t-shirt and jeans. The Dotaniki thrust through his belt and his staff in hand. If it wasn't for the accreditation tat, he might have been a Holovid star himself. But there were fine fans at the corners of his eyes that hadn't been there before, and he looked tired, leaning on his staff for support instead of effect. The last 10 months hadn't been easy on him.
It's the anniversary, isn't it?
I didn't think you'd remember, Jace. The last time you saw me do this was years ago, before Rio, before you left me.
I bit my lower lip. It was a sign of nervousness I never would have permitted myself before.
Yeah. I'm glad we're back in town. Well, missing it would be rough.
He nodded.
I'm gonna pop into church and have a drink before I go home.
He tipped me a wink, the patented Jace Monroe grin flashing. That smile used to line up the mob groupies for him. He never had any trouble with women, as he was so fond of remarking, until he met me.
Maybe I'll get all drunk and you can take advantage of me.
Damn the man, he was making me smile.
In your dreams. Go on home, I'll be along. Don't get too drunk.
Of course not.
He shrugged and stepped away. I wanted to go after him, walk down to the street together, but I stood very still and closed my eyes. My right hand lifted, almost of its own accord, and rubbed at the numb spot on my left shoulder.
Is it tingling more than it has before? Stop it, Dante. Jeff's gone. Live with it.
I am. Go away.
I rubbed my shoulder, scrubbing at it with my knuckles since my fingers were curled under and cramped.
At least it doesn't hurt anymore. Not there, anyway.
I wondered, not for the last time, why the mark hadn't faded with Jaff's death. Lucifer had first burned it into my skin. Jace was nowhere in sight when I took the lifts down and emerged blinking again into the gray day. Down on the street, the drizzle had turned to puddles, vibrating with hover wash and splashing up whenever an air bike or wheel bike went by. The ground hover traffic moving a little bit slower than usual. The sidewalks were crowded with people, most of them normals intent on their own business, since the scions would probably be home in bed. It felt good to walk, my hands dangling loose by my sides and my braid bumping my back, my boots light on cracked pavement. Bulgarov had been left in a holding cell in Jersey lockdown. The fee for the collar, plus the extra 15% I'd told Trina to charge, was probably safely in Jace's bank account by now. I didn't need the money, as there was plenty left from Lucifer's payoff. Even though I had no qualm about using it, I still flinched internally whenever I looked at my statements or signed on through my computer deck. Blood money. A payment for the life Lucifer had manipulated and cajoled me into taking. Even though, left to myself, I would have killed Santino. I had needed revenge. Lucifer still owed me, both for Doreen's daughter and for Jaframel. I didn't have a chance of collecting, but still.
He owes me. And I owe my life to a dead demon.
I winced, pacing through the rainy gray Saint City morning. The Prince of Hell might still be keeping an eye on me.
I owe him nothing. And that's exactly what the Prince of Hell is going to get from me. End of story. Think about something else, Dante. You've got a lot to brood over. Like Jace.
Jace had given up his mob family for me. Just handed it over to his second-in-command without a word and signed the papers for cessation of ownership. After fighting so hard to get his own family, he turned his back on it and showed up at my door.
Dante, you are spectacularly good at thinking things you don't want to.
It took me an hour to get to the corner of 7th and Cherry. I had stopped at a street vendor's for a bouquet of yellow daisies, and I stood on the south corner under the awning of a grocery store that had been put in 2 years ago. The times I'd been here with Lewis, there had been a used bookstore across the way. My pulse beat thinly in my temples and throat, as if I was taking down a bounty again. I clutched the daisies in their plasticine wrap, their cheerful yellow heads with black centers nodding as I held them in my trembling right hand. Coming back here every year was a penance, maybe, but who else would remember him? Lewis had no family, substituting the psionic kids he fostered for a real blood link. And to me, he was the only family I'd known. My caseworker from the time I was an infant until I was 13. If I was anything to be proud of, it was because Lewis had taught me how to be. Memory rose. That's the curse of being a scion, I suppose. The Magi techniques for training the memory are necessary and ruthless. A Magi-trained memory can remember every detail of a scene. A magic circle, a canon of runes, a page of text. Necessary when one is performing greater works of magic where everything has to be done right the first time, but merciless when things happen that you want to forget. The prickling in my shoulder had gone down, thankfully. There wasn't much of a crowd here. Most passersby ducked into the small grocery and came out carrying a plastic bag full of alcohol bottles or synthash cigarettes. I stood just around the corner, tucked out of the way close to the wall, and stilled myself, forcing the memories to come clear and clean. He'd brought me down to the bookstore, a special treat, and the smooth metal of the collar against my throat was less heavy on that unseasonably sunny autumn day. The crisp cinnamon smell of dried leaves hung in the air, and the sky was impossibly deep blue, the type of blue that only comes in autumn. Blue enough to make the eyes ache. Blue enough to drown in. Lewis had pushed his spectacles up on his beaky nose, and we walked together. I didn't hold his hand like I did when I was a little girl, having grown self-conscious in the last few years. I had ached to tell him something, anything about how bad things were at school, but I couldn't find the nerve, and so we walked, and Lewis drew me out.
So, what have you been reading? Did you get to the copy of Cicero I loaned you?
Almost done.
Hurry up. Don't forget the Aurelius. I'm saving it for you if you do well on the Theory of Magic final coming up at the end of the term.
I haven't forgotten.
And did you enjoy the Ovid?
He almost bounced with glee inside his red t-shirt and jeans. He didn't dress like a social worker, and that was one more thing to love about him. He had given me my name, my love of books, and my 12-year-old self had cherished wild fantasies of finding out that Lou really was my father and was just waiting for the right time to tell me.
I enjoyed it, but the man was obsessed with women.
Most men are.
Lewis found the oddest things funny, and it was only once I reached adulthood that I understood the jokes. When I was young, of course, I had laughed with him, just happy that he was happy with me, feeling the warm bath of his approval. I had been about to reply when a man blundered around the corner, jittering and wide-eyed, stinking of Cormen 13. It was a chill freak, desperate for his next dose, his eyes fastening on the antique chronograph Lewis wore, a glittering thing above his dat band and looking pawnable.
Hand over the chronograph.
Run, Dante!
My feet rooted to the ground as the chill freak's knife glittered, throwing back a hot dart of sunlight that hurt my eyes.
Run, Danny, run!
God damn you!
My eyes were hot and grainy. Drizzle had soaked into my hair and coat. I was standing exactly where I'd stood before I'd obeyed him, turning and running, while the chill freak descended on Lewis. The cops had caught the freak, of course, but the chronograph was gone, and the man's brain so eaten by chill he could barely remember his own name, let alone what he'd done with the piece of antique trash. And Lou, with his books and his love and his gentleness, had left me for death's dry country, that land where I was still a stranger, even if I'd known my way to its borders. I laid the flowers in their plas wrap down on the wet sidewalk, as I did every year. The bloodstone ring on my third finger flashed wetly, a random dart of power splashing from its opaque surface.
Hey, Lou.
Hi. He had a grave marker, of course, out in the endlessly green fields of Mount Hope. But that was too far for a student to ride public transport and get back to the school by curfew. So I ended up coming here, downtown, where he had died almost immediately. If I'd been older, combat-trained and a full necromance, I could have run off the chill freak or mended Lewis's violated body, held him to life, kept him from sliding off the bridge and into the abyss, under the blue glow of death. If I'd been older, if I'd had some presence of mind, I could have distracted the chill freak, diverted his attention. Wearing a collar meant I couldn't have used any psionic ability on him, but there were other ways. Other things I could have done.
Other things I should have done.
I miss you.
I had only missed two anniversaries. My first year at the academy up north, and the year Doreen died. Murdered, in fact, by a demon I hadn't known was a demon at the time.
I miss you so much.
Nihil desperandum!
Never fear.
Other kids were raised on fairy tales. Lou raised me on Cicero and Confucius, Milton and Cato, Epictetus and Sophocles, Shakespeare, Dumas, and for special treats, Suetonius, Blake, Gibbon, and Juvenal.
These are the books that have survived, because they're as close to immortal as you can get. They're good books, Dante. True books. And they'll help you.
Oh, Lewis. They did.
I came back to myself, listened to the morning hover traffic overhead. People passed by on Cherry to get to the shops, but nobody was going down this side of 7th because it was apartment buildings, and everyone was gone for the day, or in bed. The daisies, a bright spot of color against cracked hard pavement, glowed under the thickening rain.
All right. See you next year, I guess.
I turned slowly on my heel. The first steps, as usual, were the hardest, but I didn't look back. I had another appointment today. Jace would beat me home, and he would probably already have a few holovids from the rental shop on Trivisadero. Maybe some old Father Egyptos. We both loved that show and could quote damn near every line of dialogue.
What evil creeps in the shadows? Egyptos, the bearer of the Scarab of Light, shall reveal all.
Uncharacteristically, I was smiling. Again. Morning had leapt gray into drizzling afternoon as I stood before the wooden door, the street behind me gathering circles of orange light under each street lamp, a glowing red neon sign in the front window, a real antique, buzzed, its reflection cast on the bank of yarrow below. I felt wrung out and a little sore, as usual after a bounty, and the blood on my clothes, with its simmering stink of decaying spicy fruit, didn't help. The door was painted red, and the shields over this small brick house with its cheerful ragged garden were tight and well-woven. Calafor poppies vied with mugwort and feverfew, nasturtium and foxglove. There were some late bloomers, but mostly the plants were now merely green or dying back, getting ready for the rainy chill of winter. I smelled the sharpness of rosemary. She must have just harvested her sage, too. In summer, the garden was a riot of color. The property line shields, smooth and carefully woven, an obvious stronghold. Then again, I'd heard Sierra never left her house. I'd never seen or heard of her around town. And I didn't care either. I came here for a different reason. I blinked against the gray sunlight. Wished it was darker. Like most scions, I never feel quite myself during the day. A marker for nocturnalism crops up with amazing regularity in scion gene profiles. When darkness falls is when I feel most alive. At least that hadn't changed, even if everything else about me had. I was glad I was back in time. I'd missed my appointment last month and been a little out of sorts ever since. I lifted my hand to knock at the door again just as the house shields flushed a warm, welcoming rose color. I pushed back a few stray strands of my damp hair and met Sierra Ignatius's eyes. Her gaze was wide and pale blue, irises fading into the whites, the pupils sometimes flaring randomly. There was an odd film over her eyes, the sign of congenital blindness. Usually blindness is fixed with gene therapy during infancy, but for some reason she hadn't received the therapy then or in later years. Despite that, she moved around her little brick home with an accuracy and assurance some sighted people never achieve. Rumor had it that her parents had been Lutters, but I wasn't curious enough to find out. Her blindness made her, like me, an anomaly. It was probably why I allowed myself to come here.
Danny!
She was a short, thin woman with thistle-down hair and a thorn-laden cruciform tat on her left cheek. My cheek burned, my tat shifting. I felt another unwilling smile tug the corners of my mouth up. Sierra looked like a tiny pixie full of mischief, and her aura smelled of roses and wood ash. A clean, human smell I somehow didn't mind as much as others.
I wondered if you'd come back. You missed last month.
Behind Sierra, taking her hand off the hilt of her short sword, was a rangy female shaman with the kind of tensile grace that shouted combat training and a tat that matched Sierra's. She inclined her chin gracefully and turned on her heel. Kor didn't like me, and the feeling was mutual. We'd tangled over a bounty once, one of her Skinlan friends I'd hauled in for murder and illegal gene splicing. She didn't hold a grudge, but she didn't have to like me either. And whenever I showed up for my appointment, Kor took herself upstairs out of the way. I appreciated her restraint. I would have hated to kill her.
Sorry I missed last month.
I stepped inside. I took a deep lungful of Kiffy incense and the smell of dried lavender. The air was still and close. As soon as Sierra closed the outside world out, I felt my shoulders relax fractionally. Her front hall was low and dim, candles burning in a niche under a statue of Aesculapius. The walls were wood paneling and the floor mellow hardwood.
I was out on a bounty.
You've been out on a bounty since I've met you, sweetie. Come on back. The table's set up. What's hurting you today?
She was, as usual, all business, setting off past me with a confident step. Faster than I could have gone with my eyes closed. I saw her aura fringing, sending out little fingers of awareness. The perfume of spiced power trailed behind her, reminding me of Jace. We walked down the hall, through the neat little kitchen with its racks of potted herbs in the window, and the sun catcher above, lazily hanging on a string. Her counters were clean and the kitchen table clear, except for two wine-red placemats and a vase of white lilies that sent a shiver up my spine. There were few flowers I could see anymore without thinking of Santino.
Hurting me?
As usual, I pretended to give the question my full attention as she led me into the round room at the back of the house, where a fountain of piled black stones dripped. She stepped down onto the plush carpet and moved into the middle of the room where the table sat, draped with fresh white sheets.
Hurting me? Nothing really. Only my shoulder, my hand, my heart. Not much. I feel pretty okay.
Liar. All right.
She smoothed the sheets, a habitual movement.
What do you want me to work on?
I shrugged. Then remembered she couldn't see the motion. Slid out of my coat, hung it up on the peg by the door, and undid my rig with the clumsy fingers of my right hand. My back, whatever else. Like usual. Just work your magic, that's all. Sierra cocked her pale pixie head, listening as I hung my bag and my rig up.
Cordite. And I can smell that sweet stuff. You got clipped.
I found myself smiling again. I could remember going months without smiling. Before Rio.
You're amazing. Yeah, I'm a little dirty. Sorry.
Yeah. I leaned down, working my boots off with my right hand, then padded to the table in my sock feet.
Do you mind?
If I had still been fully human, I would have had to chem wash to get the blood off. As it was, only my clothes were bloody. My skin had absorbed the thick black ichor. She, like all scions, could see the staining of black diamond fire in my aura, marking me as something close to demon. She never asked me to chem wash, figuring whatever communicable nasties I had weren't dangerous to her. It was open wounds she had to watch out for, and I didn't have any of those.
Not on the outside, anyway.
Of course not. Your back, you said. What about that left shoulder of yours?
I reached up with my right hand, touched my shirt over the mark.
Leave that alone for right now.
It was the standard answer, and as usual, she accepted it gracefully. I stripped down, left my clothes on the straight-backed chair set to the side, and eased myself onto the thigh-high table, squirming onto my belly. Sierra pulled the sheet up over me. I told her she didn't have to leave while I disrobed. Most scions are pretty comfortable with nakedness. I wasn't precisely uncomfortable, but taking her up on her offer to give me privacy while I undressed seemed weak. I fitted my face into the face cradle, seeing the carpet below me in the flickering wash of candlelight, and my braids swinging to the side.
I live for that sound.
She folded the sheet down low on my hips. The bolster went underneath my ankles to take the stress off my lower back.
Oh, twice. Must have been a hard month.
Yeah, a couple of bounties.
Always working.
She laid her hands flat on my back, one right between my shoulder blades, the other at the base of my spine. A few moments of pressure, then she rocked me back and forth a little, gauging the way my body mass responded.
Too tense, Danny. When are you going to learn to loosen up?
Gotta work to pay you, sweets.
It wasn't true. I had enough money now. I had all the money I could ever want. I didn't need the bounty fees. But oh gods, did I need the bounties. She moved to the head of the table. That's what I'd been waiting for. She leaned in and smoothed both her hands down on either side of my spine, digging into my muscles under the tough, perfect golden skin. Oh, her hands were cool and forgiving, my skin warmer than hers because of the hiked metabolism. She started the usual routine, kneading at me. My right hand relaxed and dangled off the table as I let go. Fraction by fraction, Sierra's hands seeking out knots and nodes of tension. Gabe had bought me my initial consultation with Sierra, and I'd thought it a frivolous gift, even after she bullied and dragged me to the red-painted door at the appointed time. The first two-hour massage had ended with me in a languid puddle, more relaxed than I could ever remember. I'd gone home whistling, arrived at my door in the closest thing to a good mood I'd had since before Rio, and promptly burst into tears on my way upstairs. Thank the gods Jace had been out shopping for groceries. I'd locked myself in the bathroom and had a completely uncharacteristic fit of sobbing, then took a long hot shower. As dawn had risen through my bedroom window, I had fallen asleep for the first time in weeks. A thin, restless, troubled sleep, but sleep nonetheless. That did it. I was booked. I came back once a month unless I was on a bounty, and each time it was the same. Her delicate iron fingers digging into me, smoothing me out. Hers was a touch I didn't have to fend off or worry about what it cost me. I paid her, she touched me. It was that simple, even and uncomplicated. Why couldn't everything be like that?
Are you staying in town long?
Her voice was soft, and if I chose not to talk, she would be silent. A while. Don't know when the next bounty's coming up. I felt the involuntary quiver go through me. She must have too, because her touch gentled.
Too much pressure.
You couldn't hurt me if you tried, Shaman. At least not without steel or a plas gun and a whole lot of luck.
No, not too much.
I wish I knew exactly what I was. I wish Jeff or Mel would have had time to tell me.
There I was again, thinking about him. I kept my eyes closed, just thinking.
About?
About a demon. About a fallen demon. A dead demon that I only knew for a short time but I can't stop thinking about. He won't leave me alone. And neither will the only other man I ever loved. The one that betrayed me so honorably. A ghost I can't have and a man I can't touch, and skipping from bounty to bounty isn't helping any.
About the past. She kept working at my back, smoothing down the muscles, moving to one side or the other and using her elbow or the flat of her forearm, her entire weight pressing down through tough skin. Never a comfortable subject.
That's the understatement of the year, sunshine.
I shifted in the face cradle a little, the emerald grafted into my cheek, digging into my flesh. She moved to my legs, flipping the sheet aside, and I swallowed dryly.
You have great skin.
Tactful of her to change the subject. The spicy smell of Kiffy was stronger now, reminding me of Gabe's house. Gabe loved burning that stuff.
Lucky girl.
She took the hint, and the rest of the massage was spent in blissful silence on her side and increasingly ill-tempered brooding on mine. It was the bounties that were bothering me, I tried to tell myself. Jace was beginning to look a little ragged. 10 bounties in under 6 months, none of them cakewalks, and he hadn't uttered a word of protest. Not only that, but he'd insisted on coming along, and I'd caved each time, allowing it, expecting it, treating him as if it was the old days when he had taught me how to track, how to let my intuition do the work for me, how to find a mark and stick on him, how to scent the prey and become the thing you hunted. How to find clients that would pay for things other than a legitimate tag, but short of actual murder.
Admit it, Danny. You don't want to let him out of your sight. You're afraid he'll vanish and never come back, or that you'll come back to an empty house.
It was uncomfortably close to the truth. The fact that Jace never asked about Jaframel only made it easier to pretend nothing was happening. That we were just living together. Just roommates with a good thing. A lucrative bounty hunting partnership, and a carefully charted dance where he moved forward and I retreated, but never fast or far enough. Was he waiting for me to forget Jaframel?
It was only a few days, Danny. And he was a demon. He lied to you about Doreen's daughter, about Santino, about Lucifer's plans. What is it with the men I fall for and their aversion to the truth?
Time to turn over.
I did while she held the sheet. Then she slipped the bolster under my knees and started working on the front of my legs. The sound of water from the fountain in the corner soothed me, just like the smell of Kiffy and Sierra's strong fingers. She knew just where the aches were.
What I would have given to know about this when I was human.
But when I was human, I never would have let anyone do this to me. Even if I was paying them and thus absolving myself of obligation. She even massaged my abdomen, but left my shoulder alone, and I didn't glance down to see the fluid glyph in its pretty scarred lines, looking more like a decoration than a brand, the mark of a demon.
Is it his name?
That was not the first time I'd wondered that.
Or is it best opened by this date?
Lucifer put it on me. Like Nichtren mark their thralls.
Maybe it's like a brand.
A swift spill of feeling roiled through my stomach. Revulsion and heat all mixed into one pretty package. Jaffer Mill's mouth on mine. His skin against mine. The semaphore of desire that needed no translation. My rings flashed, went back to swirling lazily. My aura ringed me with the twisted black diamond flames of demon and the sparkles that meant necromance. I looked like nothing else in the landscape of power now. The massage ended with Sierra taking my hair out of its braid and rubbing my scalp. I had never known what kind of tension lurked in the thin tendons and flat muscles over the cranium. It was unreal. By far, my most favorite moment of the massage was when she undid my braid. It was like having Doreen play with my hair again.
Doreen?
It was turning out to be a day of unpleasant memories all around.
I wish Trina at the agency would call in with the news that she's scouted me another bounty. There has to be another job out there that'll keep me going so fast I don't have time to slow down and brood.
And remember. Memory. Rage. Guilt. The Holy Trinity, as far as I was concerned. Good fuel channeled into bounties and justice. Hadn't I ever felt something softer?
Well, we could add shame to the list, couldn't we?
My shame. That I was still grieving for a dead demon I hadn't known more than a few days, who had augmented me into something even my best friends had a hard time looking at. Sierra's fingers trailed through my hair one last time.
Better?
Much. I made a mental note to tip her 40% this time. I opened my eyes, my left hand curling as if seeking a slim, sheathed shape. It was a reflex, as if I hadn't just spent almost a year without a sword. My right hand wasn't cramping either. It had straightened out, the fingers relaxed. The mark lay cold and quiescent against the hollow of my shoulder. Thanks, Sierra.
No problem. Want some tea? Or would you like to let yourself out?
So tactful.
I'd better let myself out. Thanks.
You're very welcome, Danny. See you next month?
She retreated, trailing the spiky, spicy smell of shaman and the decaying smell of human with her. I took another deep lungful of kiffy and exhaled into the dark air, staring at the white-painted ceiling. I rested there against the table for a moment.
See if Trina can find another quick job, Danny. Just one more. Then it might be time for a vacation. Close up and mage seal the house, go to the islands or something. Start chasing down more magi shadow journals and break their codes. See if any of them know what you are. Maybe even see if there's a magi circle that will apprentice you, even if you are too old. Your initial training's sound. You're not rusty, and who knows how long you'll live now. Demons are virtually immortal unless killed by violence or suicide. Who knows how long you'll be around?
I hated that thought. It usually waited until the middle of the day while I was trying to sleep to show up.
All right, Valentine, get your ass in gear. You need to go home and change.
I surged up off the table, taking the sheet with me. Was dressed in 5 minutes and fully armed in another five.
I'll let myself out the back door and through the back gate. Up 9th, cut through the university district to stretch my legs while I do some thinking. I think best while moving, and that'll get me home in time to get some serious trash holovid viewing in.
I tapped my dad band, paying Sierra's fee and tacking 40% on for a tip. I'd have Trina schedule me another appointment next month. Outside, the afternoon was wet and fragrant. The smells of Sierra's garden temporarily overwhelming the drowsing stink of Saint City air. I glanced up at the sky, scanned my surroundings out of habit, and felt my shoulders come up under the habitual burden of tension as I stepped back into my life.